Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We'd welcome your calls from out across America, because right now it doesn't really look as if we're going to have our regularly scheduled guest, Craig Wynn, who is supposed to have been with us today. Anyway, if you have any questions or comments or like anything to say about Memorial Day, why don't you give us a call? Otherwise, I'd like to put what's happening as we celebrate Memorial Day into its proper context. And you know, one of the terrible things is that so many of our young people today don't understand war. War is something that you see on television, sounds like a great adventure, but war, as General Sherman had said, you cannot qualify war in harsher terms than I will. War is cruelty and you can't refine it. And later, in 1879, when he was addressing the military academy in Michigan, he said this: "War is barbaric. Its glory is all moonshine. It's only those who have neither fired a shot nor heard the shriek and groans of the wounded who cry aloud for blood, for vengeance, more desolation. War is hell." And it really is. And what the average American does not understand is World War III has started. There is a plan to take us into a massive world war. We're going after Syria. We're going after Iran. We're going after Saudi Arabia. And it's only a matter of time before the whole of the Middle East is up in flames. And believe me, when we do that, there's going to be a tremendous blowback here, because there are Islamic terrorist cells in America, and we haven't arrested all of them, and we may not even know where they all are. We have known that these Islamic terrorist cells were here dating back to the 1980s. We've been actively encouraging Islamic radicals to come into this country. After the war with Iraq ended in 1991, we brought about 5,000 Muslims from the Republican Guard here into the United States and settled them all across the country. In fact, they were the people who were involved with Tim and McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing. But you couldn't let the American people know that any more than you could let them understand the American government knew who was behind the bombing of the American embassy in April of 1983 and the Marine barracks in October of 1993, where over 240 Americans were killed. And yet we refused to retaliate. And, of course, who was responsible for it? Why, it was Hezbollah, which, of course, means the Army of God, which was backed and financed by the Iranians that we had brought to power about 3 years earlier. Remember, it was the American government that toppled the Shah of Iran in 1979 and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. So that would have been about 4 years earlier when we started thinking about the attack on the American embassy. We had brought the Ayatollah to power and created a radical Islamic state. There were no radical Islamic states outside of Saudi Arabia at that time, and of course they were a different branch of this whole Islamic movement, because they are Shia Muslims and they are Sunni Muslims elsewhere. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty, and we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing the news behind the news, the story behind the story. But right now, we have with us on the line, Craig Wynn. Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing wonderful.
Well, I'm so glad that you could be with us. And we wanted to talk a little bit about your book, Prophet of Doom. And it's really probably, in my estimation, I've read a lot of books on Islam. It's the best book we have now going into the background of this Islamic movement, which has been dormant until about 25 years ago, but now is coming forward in its full fury, similar to with many people dedicated to those writings of Muhammad that you have actually put forward in your book so well. Tell us a little bit about that book and how you happened to write it.
Well, certainly, Stan. The reason I came to write it is that right after 9/11, I decided I would find out for myself why Muslims thought killing us was service to God. So I flew off to Israel and met with members of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and Oscar Martyrs Brigade. And as I was interviewing them and asking them why they were killing us, all they did was quote from the Islamic Hadith and from the Quran, saying that their prophet and God ordered them to wipe us out to the last. So with that kind of an answer, I felt compelled to study their scriptures and find out if what our president and our media are telling us is true, which is that they're corrupting their religion, or whether they were quoting their prophet and God correctly, in which case their religion was corrupting them. So I spent 10,000 hours studying the Islamic scriptures and came to write two books, one about my meeting with the terrorists called Tea with Terrorists, and the second, Prophet of Doom. The difference is that Prophet of Doom is 100% focused on what the Islamic scriptures themselves say. It's the first book ever to take the five core books of Islam. There's only five books that matter in Islam. Four are hadith collections. One is the Quran. And it takes those five books and puts them in chronological order. Not even the Quran is in chronological order. It's just a literal hodgepodge thrown together haphazardly. It's the product of really an unstable mind. And it has no context either. But particularly two books, the Sirah by Ishaq and the History by Tabati, are a collection of scripture, hadith, from Muhammad that provide the context so that one can understand both the chronology and context of the Quran. And that's all the Prophet of Doom is. It takes all five of the original books of Islam from Muhammad's explanation of creation, which is sheer lunacy, all the way through Muhammad's death, including the 10 years of the Islamic era where he led 75 terrorist raids.
All right, you hold that call right there for the time being. We'll be right back with Mr. Craig Wynn. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Craig Wynn. We're talking about his book, Prophet of Doom. If you haven't read it, why, you really need to, because it's got a wonderful appendix, and the last 200 pages are simply chronologically or actually organized the various statements. What did Muhammad say about Satanism? Or what did the writings, the holy books of the Muslim faith say about Satanism, or about violence, or about jihad, about killing, or about Christians, or all sorts of subtitles you'll find fascinating, and it makes it so much easier to get the context of what this is all about. And I'll never forget, on one of our programs we were doing actually on a local radio station, somebody calling in and saying that certainly the Muslim faith was a peaceful religion, and of course, could Craig give any at all refutation to that fact? Well, after Craig had given about 50 or 75 quotations directly from the Quran, probably wasn't that many, maybe closer to 40, pointing out that this is not true, that this is a religion in its very essence of violence, I interrupted and asked the man if that would satisfy him, if he wanted Craig to go on. And his response was, well, but look what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. So that had nothing to do with the issue. There's a terrible war going on over there between Israeli and Palestinians, having nothing to do with the Muslim faith, which by its very nature, if you get to the essence of it, is advocating violence. Now, one of the things I would like you to tell our listeners today is what you learned when you were actually there in Palestine, and you were talking to various groups, representative of Hamas and people who work for Yasser Arafat, and then some of the other more violent Islamic groups. But weren't many of these actually trained and financed by American tax dollars?
That's correct. Fatah, which is Yasser Arafat's political party, when we hear that Yasser Arafat was popularly elected, which is repeated often in American media, it's sort of like the popular elections in the People's Republic of China. There's only one political party, and Yasser Arafat controls it, Fatah. The Oscar Martyrs Brigade is the military wing of Fatah. It's not associated with Yasser Arafat. It is his military wing. At the camp, not the Camp David Accords, but at Oslo, which is a product of Bill Clinton's Camp David negotiations, Yasser Arafat convinced Bill Clinton that he needed a police force to go after terrorists. He needed that police force trained, and he needed them armed. And he promised that he would use it to squelch terrorism. Well, Bill Clinton gave him American M16s, thousands of them, and trained the Oscar Martyrs Brigade in the U.S. in Virginia at the CIA training facility. When I met with the two lieutenants and a captain in Fatah, the captain being a direct report to Yasser Arafat, Oscar Martyrs Brigade, the captain and two lieutenants were jubilant because 24 hours earlier they had blown off the heads of 11 Jewish women and children at point-blank range with American rifles and American bullets using American training. And they were ecstatic because they said they were not terrorists, they were army men, because they had killed them with our rifles. And the story is actually a well-known story. It was a bus going to Emmanuel. They blew off the axle of the bus, and when the women and children fled the bus, they shot them at point-blank range. So yes, we are aiding and abetting our own demise. It's just like when we would not support the Shah in Iran and we got the Shiite theocracy. It's just like we go into Iraq today and think we're doing this wonderful thing. And I'm going to tell you, at the moment we leave Iraq, it will be a Shiite theocracy identical to Iran, and we will have made our own enemy. One thing you did say, though, that is actually incorrect. Well, that Muslim that called in and said that Islam was a religion of peace, when there is, in fact, no peace in Islam, you went on to say that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has nothing to do with Islam. It has everything to do with Islam. It only exists because of Islam. If there were no Islam, the so-called Palestinians would not be killing Jews. The Quran orders Muslims to continue to kill, and Muhammad said, kill every Jew. And they will continue to kill Jews until there are no more of them. It is a prerequisite in the religion to wipe Jews and Christians out to the last, and that is why they kill.
All right, fine. Well, of course, not fine that this is, but I'm glad you made the point. The problem is, as you get into reading and studying it, and you read Craig's book, you'll find that there's so many admonitions in favor of violence. In fact, the entire Muslim faith was originally based upon violence, wasn't it?
Correct. Yeah, one of the things that people don't know is that the religion of Islam ended with the satanic verses. In fact, that's one of the interesting things I think about Prophet of Doom, is that just like the translators of Mein Kampf, the men who translated Mein Kampf 6 months before the beginning of World War II, 14 and a half years after Hitler wrote it, they did a running commentary as to hold Hitler accountable. I do the same thing in Prophet of Doom. I run through all of the Islamic scriptures, but I do a running commentary on them. And one of the things that I point out is that it becomes apparent in the Islamic scriptures that the religion of Islam died in its entirety with the satanic verses, and the political doctrine, which becomes a terrorist manifesto of Islam, replaced it with what's called the Pledge of Aqaba, which took place as Muhammad was fleeing Mecca in shame after the satanic verses. And from the Pledge of Aqaba, which, and I'll quote directly, we pledge allegiance to Muhammad to wage war against all mankind. From that moment on, Islam becomes a terrorist manifesto. Muhammad, in the course of 10 years, leads 75 terrorist raids. All but two of them are aggressive assaults where he took armed militants against defenseless civilians and killed them, enslaved the children, used the proceeds of what they stole, the Quran, by the way, authorizing stealing, the eighth surah is called the Spoils of War surah, and selling the children and selling the stolen property to bribe more militants into his ranks and to buy more arms so that he could lead more raids. And he led 75 of these raids, some of which are so blood-curdling, so utterly demonic, they almost defy words. But there they are in all of their gruesome detail in the Islamic scriptures, complete with rapes and tortures.
Now, could you explain to our listeners what the satanic verses are?
Sure. What happened is that that after 10 years of preaching, Muhammad had some 50 followers, which he had to send to Abyssinia, a Christian country, and he had about 4 followers that stayed with him in Mecca. And the Quraysh, all the way through, that was his own tribe, in Mecca, were absolutely convinced that Muhammad was a demon-possessed charlatan. There's over 400 repetitions in the Quran of Muhammad's own family, his neighbors, and kin, calling him a demon-possessed a charlatan who was in this for the money. So the Quraysh came to Muhammad and said, I'll tell you what, we'll make a deal with you. The deal is we'll give you the most money of anybody in town. We'll make you a co-king, so you have all the power, and we'll give you the prettiest women in town, sex, if you will acknowledge our gods. So Muhammad accepted the bargain, and he said that Alat, Manat, and Aluza, which are Allah's daughters, they were pagan idols, are goddesses and are intermediaries to Allah. Now, at the time, Muhammad was worshipping Ar-Rahman, which is named after the Persian devil. He was a Yemenite moon god. And the Quran at that point changes gods from Ar-Rahman to Allah, and Muhammad then acknowledged these other pagan deities. Sometime later, Muhammad recants that that Quran verse and says that Quran verse was given to him by Satan. So it became known as the Satanic Verses. And in the Quran, Allah says that all of his messengers speak on behalf of Satan. So that's what Salman Rushdie wrote about. It's a real event in Muhammad's life, confirmed in both the Quran and the Hadith, where Muhammad acknowledges that he issued a Quran surah that was given to him by Satan.
Well, of course, that didn't make Salman Rushdie very popular with the Ayatollahs over there in Iran. Didn't they actually put out a contract on his life? And
yes.
Is that contract still in place?
Yes, and yes. And the reason they put the contract out on his life is the number one lesson I would like America to understand about the nature of Islam. Salman Rushdie told the truth. He revealed Islamic scriptures that demonstrated, one of many Islamic scriptures, that demonstrate that Muhammad was demon-possessed and that Islam is, in fact, a satanic cult. The one thing that Islam cannot tolerate, and therefore all of the power brokers that benefit from Islam, the one thing they cannot tolerate is anything being revealed about Muhammad. If Muslims knew Muhammad, if they knew that he was a pedophile and a rapist and a terrorist, most Muslims would choose to get their spiritual advice from somewhere else. Most people won't trust their souls to a rapist and to a pedophile and to a terrorist. So the reason they had to put the contract on Salman Rushdie is they had to put the fear of death in anyone who would have the courage to expose Muhammad for what the Islamic scriptures actually say about him. And what that means to all of your listeners, Dr. Stan, is if we can get enough Americans to read Prophet of Doom, which is the Islamic scriptures, and condemn Islam, repudiate it, Islam will not be able to exist in any free society, and half of the war on Islamic terror will be won with that achievement alone.
In fact, the greatest enemy we have in this battle with Islamic terror is the truth, and would be Christianity. Now, if you are a Muslim living in a Muslim country, and you'd convert to Christianity, isn't it accepted? Aren't they almost required to kill you?
If you were a Muslim and you give up Islam for any religion, if you just say, I don't want to be a Muslim anymore, they kill you. Because the Quran says in the fourth surah, if any Muslim goes back on Islam, reneges on Islam, the word in Arabic is become a renegade, they must be killed. So Allah will not tolerate choice, and any Muslim who ceases to be a Muslim is to be killed by Quranic order.
And, of course, in the Muslim countries, there is no freedom of religion. Here in America, they demand freedom of religion. They say, oh, you have no right to persecute us just because we believe as we do. And, of course, they can practice a religion because America is a Christian country and is tolerant. Whereas the very essence of the Muslim faith is intolerance. And even if you're a Christian and Jews that are allowed to live in a Muslim country, you are a second-class citizen, you pay an extra tax, and we'll talk a lot more about this and many other things when we get back. We'd welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that we carry Miracle 2 soap products here at Radio Liberty, and we can't play any... We can't make any claims at all for them, but we can certainly tell you that the people who use the products tell us they do wonderful things for them. They tell us that they help them with rashes and acne, and certainly if people use the neutralizer, which is a very alkaline solution, some of them say it helps their heartburn, and other people say that it helps the lower gastrointestinal tract. And I know I've used these products for quite some time. I wouldn't be without my moisturizing soap, and I wouldn't be without the gel, because it has so many uses for aches and pains and for simply burns or for just about anything you want to use it for. It seems to work, and why it works, I don't know. But I can suggest you might really find the items as helpful as we do. Why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, Miracle 2. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Craig Wynn. And if you're out there in the listening audience, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Craig Wynn. We're talking about what's happening as far as the conflict with the Muslims. And you really can't understand the conflict that is growing between the West, or at least between the United States and the Muslim world, without having a sound understanding of what the Muslim faith involves. And of course, that's why this book, Prophet of Doom, that Craig has written, is so vitally important, because you not only read 800 pages of the details of the background and try to put the certainly the Quran along with the other items so it has some sort of, makes some sort of sense out of it. But the back of the book is sort of a glossary of terms. And what are some of those terms you cover there in the back of the book where you have specific, I know you have a specific section just on what these various books of the Bible have to say about Satanism or violence. What about some of the other things there?
Yes. What I did is that the book itself is a chronological presentation of Islam where I put everything in context and everything in chronological order. But when you do that, one of the things you no longer have is things arranged topically. For example, with the 75 terrorist raids, the terrorist raids are covered over a period of like 700 or 400 pages. So I did at the end of the book is I arranged every important Islamic quote, 3,000 of them, by topic. And the topics are things like jihad. What does it really mean? It's all bloody fighting, by the way. Terrorism, torture, the slave trade, lust. Which is one of Muhammad's greatest vices, thievery, demons. Muhammad claimed that he was demon-possessed several times in his life, and there's many references to demons in Islam. Allah is another one of the subjects, because Muslims, of course, love to say that we all worship the same God, which nothing could be further from the truth. There's a section on women, what Muhammad had to say about what he considered to be a organism that was about equivalent to a domesticated animal. And what Muhammad had to say about Christians and Jews is particularly insightful. He hated Jews as much as Adolf Hitler did.
All right, and I think it's so vitally important that you get through it and you go through it and you see all of the references. And really, in Muslim countries, Christians and Jews are second-class citizens. Isn't that a fair statement?
They're worse than second-class citizens. First, Islam will tolerate, under certain circumstances, Christians, so long as the Christians pay the jizya, which is a exorbitant tax that has to be paid in abject humility to Muslims. They won't tolerate Jews under any circumstances, because Muhammad said, wipe the Jews out to the last, to kill every Jew who falls under your control. But you cannot openly practice the Christian faith in any Islamic country, and in any Islamic country you cannot say anything critical of Muhammad, which means you can't even read most of the Islamic hadith.
Really, do they outlaw the hadith in the Muslim countries?
They do, but from a very unusual point of view. It's like the Catholic clerics from about from the time of Constantine all the way through the Reformation. The Catholic Church made it illegal for anyone to own a Bible and for a Bible to be printed in any of the common languages spoken in Europe, because the Catholic Church didn't want the people to know what the Bible actually said, which made them ultimately powerful. The same thing is true in the Islamic countries. The last thing Muslims want is for most Muslims to read the Sirah and the Takrit and the Hadith collections, because if they were to discover for themselves what a vile creature Muhammad was, they would lose control over them.
Well, let me suggest to our listeners that you really need to think very seriously about getting this book. It's called Prophet of Doom. It's 1,000 pages, but there's so much information there, and of course in the appendix where you have all these issues listed by subject, you'll find it fascinating and so much easier to read and understand. So remember, you can get the book by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If we do not understand the enemy that is aligned against us today, we cannot meet it and meet it squarely. And one thing I've learned from Craig and from reading his book is that we are dealing with a truly satanic religion. Muhammad, over and over again, had admitted he felt he was demonically possessed. Now, the entire difference between the Christian faith and the Muslim faith, I mean, in the Christian faith, God came down to earth to give his life for us. In the Muslim faith, Allah wants you to die in battle for him. All the difference in the world. And of course, no one who believes in Christianity could ever possibly suggest that Jesus was demonically possessed. In fact, the demons ask, why are you out? Why are you here to get us? They recognized who he really was. We'll be back here in just a moment. And welcome your calls at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I want to mention that we do carry the Big Berkey and the Berkey Life water filters, and, you know, we are entering very, very uncertain times. I don't know whether there's going to be a terrorist attack. I don't know whether they're just trying to scare us to death, but you certainly would be well to be sure you had access to drinking water. You can get by without food, but you can't get by without water, and simply, whether you want it for emergency purposes or for traveling, or whether you simply want to have it on hand to make your water taste better or to be sure that there's no contaminants in it. The Big Berkey has been used for 150 years. It's made out of stainless steel. It filters the water through ceramic filters, and of course, when it comes out, it tastes far better and most of the impurities are gone. The Big Berkey costs $279. It's available in every state but Iowa and California. However, here in California, we have something called the Berkey Light, just about the same size. It comes with two black Berkey filters, which has an entirely different means of taking out the impurities in the water, but it does a great job of taking out the herbicides and pesticides. In fact, it works even far better than the Big Berkey, which has been standard for 150 years, but the black Berkey filters have to be changed every 2 to 3 years, depending upon how many people are using it. And so let me suggest you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and look at these items. The black Berkey is $199.95, as I recall, $10 for shipping. But it does a great job, and of course it's very attractive. You can see the pictures at RadioLiberty.com. You can get special filters to take out the fluoride. In addition, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Craig Wynn. We're talking about his book, Prophet of Doom. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And one of the most important things in any battle is to know who the enemy is. Now, it is the enemy is not necessarily every Muslim, especially if he doesn't really understand his faith, but it is the people who do understand this faith, who are totally dedicated to this faith, that are the enemies of the West, and they are called to join the jihad to destroy America. And they really believe in this, don't they, Craig?
Well, the simple truth is that all good Muslims are terrorists. It is impossible to be a good Muslim, according to the Quran, and not be a terrorist. So, blanket statement, all good Muslims are terrorists. All good Muslims will kill Christians and Jews, given the chance. Now, all Muslims aren't terrorists, because most Muslims are bad Muslims. Very much like Nazi Germany or Stalin's Russia. Most of the people in Germany and most of the people in Russia were decent people, but they were bad Nazis and bad communists. And as a result, they just went along to keep from losing their heads. But the good Nazis and the good communists were corrupted beyond reason, and they were terrorists. The same thing is true with Islam. In fact, Islam itself is indistinguishable from Mein Kampf and Prophet of Doom. I dedicate almost 100 pages of the book to setting Hitler's Mein Kampf side by side with the Islamic scriptures, verse for verse, to demonstrate to America just how intolerant and violent Islam is, and how America will ultimately pay an inconceivable price for its tolerance of Islam, just like we did when we were tolerant of Mein Kampf for 15 years and ultimately cost the world 55 million lives. Well, I think yes, you're right. Islam is a doctrine that orders all Muslims to kill all non-Muslims.
And, of course, they even order Muslims to kill other Muslims who don't go along with their radical form of belief, don't they?
Well, yes, it's not a radical form of belief. It's fundamental Islam. And the reason that that's important is that that Islam cannot be reformed. And let me deal with the first point first. According to the Quran, there is a type of person that Allah detests far more than he hates Christians and Jews, and that's peaceful Muslims. According to the Quran, a Muslim cannot be peaceful. The moment a Muslim chooses to be peace-loving, they cease to be a Muslim, they become what's called a hypocrite, and the Quran orders good Muslim jihadists to kill the hypocrites. Allah says that he will personally torture them in the hottest places in hell and calls them the most vile of creatures, the worst of animals. It's a very bad thing to be a peaceful Muslim. It's a lose-lose game for you.
And actually, didn't Muhammad actually on his raids actually kill an awful lot of Muslims because they wouldn't go along with his form of belief?
Well, the reason we know about these peaceful Muslims is that when Muhammad became a full-fledged terrorist in Medina. The earliest converts to Islam, according to the Hadith, converted to Islam for fear of death and for fear of losing their worldly possessions. It's very much like, again, Nazi Germany and Stalin's Russia. But these Muslims weren't terrorists, so they did not go off on the raids with Muhammad. So Muhammad was the one who said that these people must be killed because Allah wants them killed because Allah detests all peaceful Muslims. So not only did he do that, he did it with his God's endorsement. But one of the things that becomes very clear when you put the Quran in the context of Muhammad's life is that Muhammad created Allah in his own image. So in Judeo-Christianity, Yahweh, the God of the Bible, created man in his image. In Islam, Muhammad, who was a demon-possessed, sexual pervert and bloodthirsty pirate and terrorist, created his God in his image. That's why Allah is so despicable.
Well, you know, one of the things that most Americans don't understand is that the people who are pushing this true form of the Muslim faith are working in our Muslim schools. There are Muslim schools all over this country, yep. But they're being financed by Saudi Arabia, which is really the major financiers of this movement in the United States. 80% of the Muslim mosques, even though all the people who attend the mosque don't necessarily agree, but 80% of those mosques have clerics who are coming from the true Muslim faith point of view, as Craig would call it. And then they're working within our prisons here, and they've been working there for really going back to the early 1980s to indoctrinate these criminals there in this form of Muslim faith, of which, of course, once these people are released, they can be recruited into terrorist cells. This is a frightening thing to contemplate.
And we're at fault. We're the reason this has happened. I've been writing a book, Dr. Stan, on future history, on the unfulfilled Bible prophecies, and one of the things you have to deal with is Yahweh's description of the seven churches, which is the church age. And the thing that he detests the most, universally in all of these churches, is tolerance. And the thing that he praises the most is intolerance. We Christians think that tolerance is a Christian virtue. Well, our God detests tolerance. He says that when we tolerate false teachings in our midst, we come to echo those false teachings, and we become as corrupt as those who hold them. There is no false teaching that Yahweh detests more than Islam. When you read the Old and New Testament in the Hebrew and Greek, you find that there are many hundreds of references directly to how Satan will use a false prophet to create the religion of submission, which is what Islam is, to terrorize Christians and Jews. He detests Islam, and he holds us accountable as Christians when we tolerate Islamic teachings in our midst.
And I think it's so important, this idea that Islam means peace is simply a lie, but a lie told often enough comes to be believed. Islam really means submission, doesn't it, or subservience?
Right, submission. And the reason that that's important is that Allah, since he was created in Muhammad's image and Muhammad was demon-possessed, Allah, therefore, is modeled after Satan. Yahweh built his scriptures around a singular theme, which is choice. He wants us to choose to love him and to choose to form a relationship with him. Islam is built around the central pillar of submission, which means no choice. And he wants all Muslims to fear him and to die for him. So everything in Islam is the inverse of the Bible, because Allah was modeled after Satan, who is called the adversary in the Bible. So submission is an extraordinarily important element of Islam. There is no choice, which means, by the way, that Iraq is another Vietnam. We are there. Americans are dying because our politicians are ignorant of who this enemy is, and they are deceiving us, and therefore 1,000 Americans between Afghanistan and Iraq have died, and the moment we leave, that country will be worse than we found it. And it's all because you can't build a democracy in a country controlled by Islam.
Right, and of course they don't want a democracy. They really, of course, they have a one man, one vote. It'll just be one time. The Shias will control the country, and they'll bring in their Ayatollahs, and of course they will oppress the Sunnis, the Christians. Certainly, I don't think there are any Jews there at all, but certainly the Kurds. And so that's why the Kurds and the Shia and the Sunni Muslims don't want a true democracy, which the Shias are demanding. But certainly they want a theocracy. Don't they? Isn't that what most Shias want?
Certainly. You've got two senior Shiite clerics. One is Sattar, and as you know, he has led nothing but bloody uprisings, and finally he signed a peace accord with the West, and true to form with Islam, he ignored the peace accord the day that he signed it. And the other is the Grand Ayatollah. And the Grand Ayatollah has said, Sistani, said in numerous times that what he wants is a Shiite theocracy. And he says there will be, we need to call a vote because we control 60% of the people. And he says that our goal is to establish a Shiite theocracy. And we call him the moderate Muslim that we negotiate with. But the handwriting is on the wall. There is a 100% likelihood that the moment we leave Iraq, it will become a Shiite theocracy. It will therefore be like Iran. And therefore, we played right into the biblical prophecies that said of the Gog and Magog war, Magog is a collective Iran-Iraq, that they will lead the World War III, which is an all-Islamic war against Israel, which we ought to care a lot about, because the Bible says one out of every 4 people on planet Earth die in that war.
And of course, what's even more terrifying, really, is that, you know, under Saddam Hussein, as wicked as he was, at least women had rights. This was a secular dictatorship, but it was a secular state. If we pull out and they end up with a Shia or a theocracy, why, women will be reduced to the same level that they are in Saudi Arabia or in certainly they were in Afghanistan under the Taliban, won't they?
Right. You know, first of all, we have no business allowing Americans to sacrifice their lives for the betterment of Iraq. That is not what American servicemen are asked to sacrifice their lives for, but that is absolutely correct, that the government that will replace this bloodthirsty dictator, Saddam Hussein, will be worse, but we will know less about it because Islam does not tolerate the foreign media or foreign press. If we wanted to be international do-gooders and to risk American lives to rectify horrors in a country, then the country we needed to go to is the Sudan, which actually was a fundamental Islamic country before Iran was, and they have killed 3 million Christians in the last 20 years. 3 million people have been butchered by the most fundamental Islamic government in the world. So if we wanted to go save a people from Islamic terror, we went to the wrong place. If we wanted to save America from Islamic terror, we also went to the wrong place. We needed to go to Saudi Arabia, not to Iraq.
But if we really wanted to inflame the whole world and at least the Islamic world against it, we would have done just exactly what we've done. We would have gone to Iraq and used that as a base for maintaining our troops in the Middle East, which will inflame the entire Islamic world because the Crusaders have now returned. Well, let's go to John, who's calling from Los Angeles. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Oh, Fine, thank you. I had several questions. One was these moderates. That I understand 90% of the Muslim clerics, or 90% of the Muslims, follow moderate clerics. I was wondering how they excuse these passages in the Quran and the Hadith that are advocate violence. Do they ignore them, or do they have some way to rationalize them?
All right. How would you respond to that, Craig? Oh, Craig, we seem to have lost Craig. Uh-oh. Can we get Craig back on the line? Here he's coming back on. Okay. I inadvertently cut him off here. Okay. Hi, Craig. Did you hear the question at all or not?
No, I'm sorry. We were disconnected.
That's because I disconnected you, but okay. It was because you were on the wrong line. Anyway, John, would you mind asking the question again? Because I think it's a very pointed one. I think the answer to that is so important. Ask your question again.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering about the moderate clerics. Apparently 90% of the Muslim people, or people that have called themselves Muslims, tend to follow a moderate form.
Now, wait a minute, but where do you get the idea that 90% of the clerics, are you speaking here in the United States or throughout the world?
No, I'm thinking of, I understand globally that it's only a minority that are fundamentalists. Most of the clerics seem to be more moderate, and I wondered how they account for these verses that are so violent, whether they ignore them or they rationalize them, or how is it they become hypocrites, in other words?
All right, Craig, would you like to take that question, because I think it's very important.
First, a tiny minority of Islamic clerics are what you would call moderates. The vast majority of Islamic clerics are fundamentalists. We do not have any way of knowing what percentage of average Muslims are hypocrites versus fundamentalists. There's really no way to know. My guess is that probably 30% of Muslims worldwide are jihadists, and 70% are what we call hypocrites, but it's probably 90-10 when it comes to clerics the other way around. What Muslims do every time that I debate them on the radio is the clerics will first deny that Muhammad led terrorist raids. They will deny that the Quran confirms that Muhammad led terrorist raids, or that he enslaved women and children, or that he conducted acts of mass murder. When I then say, could you repeat that very clearly and very slowly so everybody can hear you deny that these things exist? And then I will go and I will read, for as long as whatever the host of the debate will allow me to read, examples from the Quran and the Hadith where Muhammad was a bloodthirsty terrorist, textbook terrorism, and involved in mass murder. And then the Islamic cleric will say, I guess they do exist, but they were justified. So now we've shown that the cleric was willing to lie if he thought he could get by with it. And then I say, okay, why don't you explain the justification and speak really clearly so that once you explain the justification, I can read from your scriptures to show that that is untrue. And they will always say he was justified because they were the victims of other people trying to kill them, and they were just defending themselves. And then I will read countless passages, all of which that show that Muhammad conducted these acts of terrorism because he coveted power, sex, and money. At which case, they will get very frustrated and attack me personally because of what I know of their scriptures. That's the best answer I can give you.
And John, I think that Craig is absolutely right. About 80% of the clerics here in this country are financed by Saudi Arabia and their Wahhabists, and they are part of this movement. So do not for one minute believe that the vast majority of the clerics are moderate. It just isn't so.
Well, I appreciate you're correcting me on that. I was wondering, what is the penalty if any of these practicing Muslims have a copy of the Hadith, and also if there's any means by which radio broadcasting could be used to inform them of the content of these documents that are supposed to be the basis of their beliefs?
Yes, there is no penalty for a Muslim having it. In fact, matter of fact, the really good Muslim jihadists know it extremely well, because what has happened is that the Quran has redefined good and bad. Good is killing, good is rape. Good is stealing, and so good and bad have been redefined. What you find is that in a free country like America, any time somebody tries to expose these books, Muslims are threatened with excommunication if they visit the site, talk to the author, or read the book. So in the free world, they're threatened. in the Islamic countries, they're sort of spoon-fed that which the ruling elite thinks is in their interest. See, our biggest problem with Islam is that we fund, through our oil money, the tyrannies of every Islamic country, and the tyrannies are used to indoctrinate the good Muslims to become terrorists and kill us.
And, of course, in Afghanistan during the 1980s, your tax dollars were used to write textbooks that were pushing radical Islam. The CIA was printing and distributing Qurans to instill in the Islamic, the Mujahideen, this radical form of Islam, and to actually encourage this true religion, let's put it that way, that threatens our very existence today. Thank you so much, John. Thank you, Craig. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. God bless you both.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I wanted to mention that we carry something called Phonopoly. Phonopoly is a wonderful game. It's designed to teach you and your children, your grandchildren, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically, which is really the key to understanding what indeed is happening, how you can actually pronounce a word, break it up, and once a child can read phonetically, they can pronounce any word, they can begin to spell words. You'll learn the 40 basic sounds of the English language, the 10 basic rules, while playing a game that's fun in about 16 hours, while you can begin to change a child's outlook. Now, most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is the $139.95 for Phonopoly. It's basically five board games and two bonus games. We think it's a great deal. I've played it. I've enjoyed it. I think you will as well. So give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. Ask about Phonopoly or go to our website. And then, of course, we want to mention that we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to creating an Institute of the Constitution in your neighborhood, in your home. And, of course, you do this by calling the Institute at 9796. That's 886-730-9796, and getting one of their introductory kits, and there you'll find there are 12 half-hour lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo, a couple of talks, a couple of videos by by David Barton. There's a kit that explains to you how to put on a program. You'll learn a lot just by going through this program on your own, but even better, you'll be able to teach others with a kit. They tell you the questions to ask. They tell you the answers to the questions. Why not give them a call if you really care about America and form an institute in your community? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here wrapping up this afternoon's program on Radio Liberty. And, of course, I want to suggest if you don't have a copy of Craig's book, Prophet of Doom, you really need to have one. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And Craig is one of the most articulate people I know of dealing with this issue. And so we put together a four-tape set of four interviews with Craig Wynn. It's called Islam, the Religion of Doom. That's Islam, the Religion of Doom. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Get the book or get the four-tape set or get both of them together. But you must understand that our government is intentionally allowing this movement to grow in America? Why, if we don't have terrorist attacks, how are we going to get the American people to go along with more power over their lives? If we hadn't created the Islamic terrorist movement by bringing the Shah of Iran to power in 1979, by encouraging the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan so we could finance the Mujahideen and indoctrinate these Islamic warriors in this radical form of Islam, or as Craig would say, the normal form of Islam, if USAID hadn't put out $51 million to pay for the textbooks there to indoctrinate young people in Afghanistan and Pakistan, who were the basis of the Taliban, who were then we slaughtered 31,000 of them, and we only lost 5 people. Wasn't that great? But who was responsible for this? Who was financing the Taliban? Who was the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan? Why, you were, ladies and gentlemen. Who financed the Taliban in 1994 when they moved in? Why, your Central Intelligence Agency helped to finance the Taliban. If you'd like the article about how the USAID funded the Afghan schools, the books, textbooks, many of which are still being used today, pushing radical Islam, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. The facts that we financed the Taliban would come from the book on Holy Wars by John Cooley, which we don't carry, but he was the a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. You should be able to get that out of the book, or we could provide you the pages from the book. And then certainly would suggest that you go to the President's speech on the 20th of September of 2001. You can pull that down off the Internet from the presidential webpage, and there you'll find out that the United States was the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan, which meant we were providing food for the Taliban regime. And that's what it's really all about, ladies and gentlemen. We've formed the best enemies money could buy, but there's nothing new. You need to get my interview with Professor Sutton, the best enemies money could buy, how we financed the communists, how we financed the Nazis and the Adolf Hitler, how we financed even the North Vietnamese so they could keep the war going for 10 long years as we transformed America. Professor Sutton wrote a book called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. He even gave an address to the Republican National Convention back in 1972, explaining how we were financing the North Vietnamese. And when he got back to the Hoover Institute, we had never guessed what happened. Why, he wasn't congratulated. They just took his name off the door of his office. They disconnected his telephone, because the American people are never supposed to understand what's really going on in the world today. The items we listed available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We should remember the men who fought in the past today, the men who fought for America, who were willing to give their lives for this country, and we should try to preserve this country for their memory. But we're losing America because wicked people have taken over control of our government, and there are satanic forces we're facing and satanic forces at the highest levels of our government. Today, it's about time the American people understood and took a stand for freedom. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. Because if this country doesn't turn back to God, why, we will one day see God's wrath on America. And finally, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.